This episode of Landmine Radio is sponsored by Guido's Pizza. Located on International Airport Road in Anchorage, Guido's has been serving the best pizza, pasta, sandwiches, and more since 1984. Guido's is open daily for dine-in service from 11 a.m. to midnight, and they do takeout and delivery until 2 a.m. Whether I'm dining in at Guido's or ordering for delivery, the hardest part for me is always choosing what to get because they have so many amazing items on their menu. If you're looking for a quick bite or want to order food for a big party, Guido's is the place to go. Tell them Jeff from the Landmine sent you. Okay, back here in studio in Juneau with John Henry Heckendorn.
Hey, how's it going?
You were on the podcast like years ago. I think you had just come back or you were doing Airbnb.
Yeah, that was 2019, right before I left for a couple of years.
Before COVID even.
Before COVID, yeah.
Shit.
So you've been bugging me to do a podcast for a while and I've owed you one, so.
So I ran into you on the airplane last week. We were both coming down.
That's right.
And I thought you were like, I was like, oh shit, some political maneuvers happening and you know, the operatives coming down. Cause you own the ship. You fully own or partially?
One of four partners at the Ship Creek Group now. Yeah.
Which is a consulting firm that deals with all kinds of some progressive, some kind of middle moderate candidates.
Yeah. Campaign management, project management.
So I see you on the airplane and I'm thinking like, oh shit, something's going down. And you're like, no. Skiing, Eagle Crest, and Folk Fest.
Yeah. I think this is one of the best weeks of the year. I like it when Eagle Crest closing weekend lines up with Folk Fest weekend, but this year it was the week before, so I decided to come down for the whole week. And I did meet with a few legislators. We've got a bunch of clients in the building. So I got a few meetings in, but primarily here for the skiing and the music.
I didn't see you one time in the building.
Yeah. Well, I meant to have more meetings, but we ended up having a family health thing the week before last. And so I came down here thinking I was going to meet with tons of people and see people and catch up with friends. But I had so much backlog from the week before that I just basically sat on conference calls all week.
And I ran into you on Friday night. I was with a buddy. My buddy Paxson was in town. And we went to
You see Red you guys Dog. At the Red Dog? Yeah. And yeah.
It was like, I mean, Folk Fest, for people who don't come down here for that, I first experienced it in 2019 when I came down here for a session, and it got cut off for a couple of years with COVID, but it's all these people come in, musicians and from all over the state, all over the, I mean, country even. And
yeah.
Every bar becomes a, you know, musical place, and
there's,
I kind of joke and call it Dope Fest because the downtown does have a strong aroma of marijuana.
Yeah, a lot of aromas.
And there's last year I had to write about this, and I talk about it a lot, but the Driftwood experience where new owners, every year they come up and it's fine on the weekends, but last year it was like 20 people in a room that should, you know, hold maybe six.
Oh, like musicians and stuff.
Yes, with like the mandolin and the stand-up bass. It was a Saturday, Sunday night at like 4 a.m. and it was just, it's, and then people go to the Alaskan, but it's a fun time. There's a lot of people. You can't find a place. I don't know where you stay. And you have friends or?
Yeah, I stay with friends, friends on Douglas and then down in the flats, second half of the week. So makes it a lot easier.
How was skiing? Was that?
Skiing was great. I was supposed to come on Friday. I didn't make it here till Saturday night because of this, this family thing we were dealing with. But, they got almost a foot of snow right before the final day. And it was amazing. It was great. There's a crew of Juneau guys that we ski with who are really, really good skiers.
Juneau's got crazy snow. I mean, we came down, I came down, you know, before session started that week of first week of session, it snowed like 5 feet.
Yeah.
And you know, like two or three storms. And I actually went to the assembly. I think they thought I was going to say something crazy, but I went to public testimony and I just thanked them because, man, they plow the roads here.
Like, yeah.
I don't know if you've been down, like the roads get plowed quickly.
Yep.
And not just plowed, you go up, and I walk home sometimes late, I'm working in the office, there's like dump trucks out at night hauling the snow away.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, this is just maybe a fluke in downtown. I think maybe they're trying to make the capital look nice and down, you know, the capital city. I get on the Glacier Highway, I go to the valley, everything, it's all plowed.
They do a good job down here. I love the fact that, because I think Eagle Crest is owned by the city.
They run it.
And that's so cool. Like they keep the prices low. You go out there, there's folks probably in their 70s. There's like little 2-year-olds running around, you know, better skiers than I'll ever be. Just, it's like the whole community gets something out of that. And it's really cool. I wish they would keep it open longer because apparently someone was telling me that, I mean, Juneau gets more snow late in the year than it does early. So right now Eagle Crest still has tons of snow. It's totally skiable.
You know why they don't keep it open longer? I've heard people say that before.
I don't know if this is true, but someone told me it's partly because they can't hire, or they really struggle to hire. But I feel like they could staff it with volunteers, but I think all the people go for cruise ship season.
The cruise ship starts. So one came last week. I got the schedule. There was one, I think it was a Norwegian, or was it a Norwegian or a princess? Maybe it was a princess. They came last week.
Yeah.
And then there's one coming Tuesday.
Yep.
And then that's the same one. And then the week after, it starts to get a little more. And then by the end of May, April, it's like four or five a day.
It's crazy. I mean, I think the town, obviously, very dependent on tourism and the cruise ships, but it'd be great if they could find a way to, you know, bummer that they have to shut it down for all the locals just to make it work with the cruise ships.
It's probably, it's a good point. It's probably a work issue and maybe a housing issue and just all these people pour in. So, okay, so what's it like? You don't come to Juneau much. I mean, I got to mention, you got married recently, last summer.
Yeah, in May of last year, yeah.
And when the wedding was announced and there was like a kind of play, so you're Heckendorn.
Uh-huh.
And your wife's, is it Skovic?
Katie Skovic. Skovic. Yeah.
So it was Skovendorn.
Uh-huh.
And like some people in your family, I actually thought you guys were doing the name combination.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
like,
a lot of people did.
Like, I was like, oh my God, that's really very progressive.
Our friends
combine the names.
Well, my first name is already hyphenated. So I was kind of out on any sort of hyphenated name. I think if we have kids, like we've talked about, maybe they would take her name or something like that. But the double name wasn't going to work.
But Skovendorn was just kind of a funny play on words for the wedding. But
yeah.
And I thought maybe I was just, but you said all your family members were.
Well,
like
our friends, we even got letters in the mail to the Skovendorns. And it didn't help that our friends played a prank on us and they ordered a 4x8 political sign announcing our wedding and put it up by our house. Like you would have like a 4x8 sign for a campaign, which as soon as I found out about that, I went running home to try to take it down. But it was
like
up for a while.
That's like in West Texas, football's so big, and like they take these big signs out for the players.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And they put them in the yard.
Yeah.
So that's the scope. But for a while, I was like, man, that guy is really embracing the marriage.
Yeah. I mean, it kind of sounds like a Harry Potter house or something, like, you know, 10 points
it's
to Skull
cool
and
It's a cool
yeah,
name. So she's with Ship Creek as well, but she's also...
No, she doesn't work with Ship Creek Group, but she is... She's the campaign manager for the LaFrance mayoral campaign.
Oh,
right
I thought
now.
She was over. Okay. She has her own thing.
She was working at Agnew Beck, the like planning and policy firm.
Mm-hmm.
And her background is primarily in like housing and homelessness policy. And,
how'd you guys meet here in Anchorage?
Yeah. Yeah. She came up through the Alaska Fellows program in 2017.
Oh, was that a JKT thing?
I think he was involved in starting it. Yeah. With some other people as well.
So you kind of owe the marriage to JKT.
I mean, he would probably like to hear that.
He was here too. I saw him at the, on the weekend.
Yeah. He flew in on Friday night. Yeah.
That's Jonathan Christ Tompkins for the folks. Listen, former, 10-year legislator from.
Yeah. 10 years. Sitka. I think exactly.
He ran in 2012. I ran in 2012. I lost. He won. We were both very young. I think I was 28 at the time and he must've been 23.
Yeah.
He was really
23,
young.
23,
24. When he won.
Yeah. 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 He, so Katie, she initially was just kind of helping out with the LaFrance campaign, helping to write their policy platform. And I think the more they got to work with her, the more they liked her. So they kept pulling her in. She kept taking more and more hours off work. And then finally just figured she'd take a leave of absence and go work for the campaign full time.
So if LaFrance were to win, is she going to do that maybe, or does she not know?
I think TBD. I think that's definitely a possibility, but she might also take some time off, or she's working really hard right now. It's a funny situation because we got hired on to help. So we're essentially working for her. She's doing a great job, but it's like,
well, because I saw her, I do it for the political report. We track all the APOC stuff and I tend to know most, if I see somebody's name, I can associate it with like, this is related or this is somebody's political person's, you know, wife or son or whatever.
Yeah.
And I saw the name and I was like, I know that name. And I just kind of didn't, cause I saw she was getting paid from the campaign.
Yep.
And then we were talking, I think I called you a month ago to ask about something. Cause there was like a switch. And then I mentioned this and you're like, yeah, my wife. And I was like, oh my God, I knew that name.
Uh-huh. Yeah. No, it's cool. I mean, it's funny because she hasn't done a lot of political work before, but, man, she's really good at it.
So
kind of hope she does take a job with the city. Cause otherwise she's going to, you know, take us out of business. I think she's pretty good at it.
A little competition.
Yeah.
So this race now it's, starting already, I'm in Juneau, but I can see it's heating up. It's LaFrance and Bronson and Bronson's the, you know, first mayor and a long time, you know, Berkowitz won his second run.
Yep.
No runoff. Sullivan won the second term, no runoff.
Yeah.
Begich. I think the last one was Wirch.
Yep.
But this was interesting because like when Berkowitz ran his second time, it was just basically Rebecca Logan was the.
Yeah.
There was one single opponent.
Yeah. And she ran into some tough PR stuff and, you know, kind of
there was no other candidate. So it was pretty clear that was the race. And I'm trying to think back to the Sullivan. I think he had, was it Honeman? He had like one person.
The second time he ran, it was Honeman. The first time it was Clayman, Selkrag, Croft. There were a bunch of candidates.
Yeah, the first time it's jammed up because it's open. And then, but then the second time, same thing with Begich. I don't, that was a long time ago. But this one, it was Pop who got more. I thought he was going to get 10-12%.
Yep.
And he got 17. And then Tuck peeled off about 7.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, 25%. That's a lot of votes. Yeah. You know, that obviously neither one of them got anywhere close to the 40. I think she's at 36 and Bronson's at 35.
Or I think that's right. Around there.
So 45% to plus one to avoid a runoff.
Yep.
Now the question is, where do these Pop? Because Pop had a lot of votes.
Yeah.
Chris had, you know, Chris's matters as well, but the Pop ones are the really, that's the big number they're going to be going after.
Yeah, I think that's right. And you would think that with Chris being a Democrat and endorsed by the Democrats, that most of his votes would not skew towards Bronson. Although I think he probably does actually have some Bronson support. He's got some positions that are kind of all over the place.
Yeah, no, he was definitely, I mean, he was critical of Bronson, but he was also, I feel like, critical of the Assembly.
Yeah, I mean, he ran attack ads against Suzanne.
I think he was upset because when he filed, she was in, and then there was this whole effort, this kind of, you know, women came out, and some people kind of accused him of being, like, against, I mean, if it was me, I would have, you know, been pretty upset about it.
Yeah.
And it kind of cooled off, but I think that kind of bad blood stayed.
I think so, yeah. But I mean, he just doesn't really have the vote share to, I think you're right that Pop was the more critical endorsement just based on vote share.
And he came out and endorsed LaFrance. Mm-hmm. I got to give my friend, I was with Paxson at the Red Dog when you saw him. He took those pictures of the announcement.
Yeah.
And Paxson's a great photographer.
Yeah. And then you guys do a good job with the photos.
And then I saw the campaign cause we put him out with like a Creative Commons license and then the campaign used one of the pictures and gave Paxson landmine credit. So.
Yep. Yeah, I think it's interesting. I think Bronson definitely has a core base of support that I don't think is going anywhere. But I think when you think about the runoff, it's really a get out the vote game. You know, in the first round, there's so many different candidates. You're trying to persuade because people have options that are very close to you. But if it's, you know, head to head, LaFrance, Bronson, I think, the thing that strikes me is I haven't talked to anybody, maybe you have, but I haven't talked to anybody. I've definitely talked to people who are supporting Bronson. I haven't talked to anybody who's excited or like proud. They mostly just say, well, he, you know, the Assembly was tough to work with, or they say these things about like.
I mean, that kind of almost reminds me of the, I've said this before too. It almost reminds me of the Biden thing. Mm-hmm. I've never met I fucking love Joe Biden. I've never met that totally. Person. You know, the Trump people, they're everywhere.
Yeah.
But with Biden, it's like the excitement's not there, but it's almost like, I don't like the other guy.
Yeah. And I hear people who are proud of what the Biden administration has gotten accomplished. Cause they've gotten a fair amount done even relative to Obama. But, I think I agree with you. I don't find people who are like,
there's no equivalent MAGA for Biden. It just doesn't.
Yeah.
It's just so wild how many people are just ride or die Trump, you know, and I know a lot of them.
I think that's actually a good comp. I've talked to a lot of people who are excited about Suzanne because I think she brings, I think she's going to be a different kind of leader in a really, the more I've gotten to work with her, the more impressed I've been. She's a lot quieter. She's not super outspoken, banging the table kind of leader, but I think she's very good at getting people together.
I think the consensus, even some polls, I've seen some polls. I mean, I think it's pretty likely will win. You know, Bronson had a lot of struggles early on, you know, that with this Drace character and some of these contracts and the mask stuff and the star, it just gets in the voters' kind of psyche.
Yeah.
But I also don't think it's like a slam dunk. I mean, I think some people are coming down this like it's a slam dunk and he's got money, she's got money, they're going to both raise more money.
Yep.
And it's a turnout. Well, one of its turnout. I think the strength he might have, and I don't know if he's going to do this or not, but it seems to me that LaFrance is obviously very aligned with the Assembly. She was Assembly chair, and the Assembly, you know, it's like Congress. I mean, maybe they like the guy, their guy or girl, or gal, but they don't like the Assembly.
Yep.
And if she's identified with the Assembly, is that going to, you know, for some voters, going to be like, do we need that in the mayor's office too? So I think that might be kind of one of the main issues of the campaign.
I think you're right. I think what's interesting is that Bronson's most effective attack right now, or most effective argument, seems to be. But he's like kind of the last man standing, or like the last sort of bastion against this sort of like I mean, what he would call like a woke left, you know, he uses a lot of those like buzzwords. I think what's interesting to me is like, I actually think that Bronson and LaFrance have the same priorities. Like they both think that homelessness needs to get solved. They both talk about staffing up APD. They both talk about plowing the road. I mean, it's like the same issues are coming up and it's like, we need to get people into housing. We need to get the streets plowed. We need to hire more cops. You know,
we did a debate there last month for the race with all four of them. And I mean, I've followed this stuff very closely and it's just, I've been very vocal about my frustration about this state and especially Anchorage.
Yeah.
We can't build anything with the roads can't get fucking plowed.
Yep.
We have energy problems.
Yeah.
We have housing problems. Like it's the same.
Yeah.
It's these problems are the same, but they're getting worse.
Yeah.
People can't move here because there's not a lot of places to buy in Anchorage.
Yeah.
People are actually leaving.
Yeah.
More people are leaving than arriving.
Yeah.
And you know, I feel like this state should be like Dubai.
Yeah.
After all the years of oil and seriously. we've kind of fucked that up and
yeah.
It's like we're in this malaise and everyone knows the problems.
Yep.
It's not like you just listed them, I listed them.
Yeah.
But I think there's so much NIMBYism in the state.
Yeah.
And it's so funny how so often the typical development people, pro-development people, and then the people that are anti, you know, the lefty people, they so often align to stop some project or something like Holton Hills and Girdwood or this mine and Mancho mine. You know, you have people like develop, you know, industry people don't want these trucks, or you have any kind of the bridge. Maybe you have, you know, Bronson's against it. The progressives are against it.
Yep.
For different reasons. But you know, it's so hard to live in a place where it seems like anything that gets proposed gets stopped.
Yeah. I think that's right. I also think that when people do have good ideas, sometimes they struggle to like, we spend so much time having the what conversation and very little time having the how conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we'll see what happens, right? But I do think if you look at, and I'm not saying this because we're working on the campaign, because I don't think there's enough people who, it's more like politicals and insiders who listen to this podcast. So I think most people who listen to this like kind of know how they're voting probably.
100%.
Yeah. So I'm not really trying to campaign here, but
I will say if you go to the Landmine website though, like,
You guys have
put, you know, I'm just saying folks, put the ads up and that's going to sway the election. That's Bill Popp had a big ad on the website. Okay. So let's just,
yeah, no, I'll pass that on. But, I'm intrigued because I do think if you think about all the mayors we've had, the last three, four or five mayors that we've had in Anchorage, I think Suzanne will be a very different kind of mayor in terms of how she leads. And I think, cause you know, Mark Begich, Ethan Berkowitz, even Bronson, like these are guys who are confident. They talk a big game. I mean, Begich executed a lot of things, got a lot of things done. I think
Begich was a great mayor. I mean, even I go back to Sullivan and obviously I was critical of him over the police stuff because my friend got murdered in 2012. That's mm-hmm. I mean, there was Halloween.
Yeah.
It was, if there was police downtown, I don't believe he would
have been. Was that the Platinum Jacks?
Yeah.
Yeah.
My good friend that, you know, we moved together Anchorage around the same time. He was from Russia.
Yeah.
Actually from like Dagestan.
Jeez.
And you know, there was Halloween, one of the busiest nights of
year. I was on that street corner 20 minutes before that happened.
I was walking out and I was 100 feet down the street.
Oh, that's crazy.
And the, you know, things happened and he was killed.
Yeah.
For no reason, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, if there would have been, when I was younger, when I moved here, there was like beat cops downtown. There was, you know, patrols. There was, you see a little bit of that now,
mm-hmm.
but the police issue aside, I mean, even Sullivan was like, I feel like things ran smoother.
Mm-hmm.
It was really when the price of oil went down in 2015, when Walker came in the first term.
Well, when the state slashed,
you know, and the state funding. Just started slashing things and slashing. And then the municipality, like Anchorage doesn't, you know, Bronson talks about tax dollars and the budget. And it's like, if you look at the costs of the last two or three years of inflation impacts and you know, healthcare cost, wage costs, equipment costs, you know, you have to spend a little bit more just to keep the same level.
Yeah.
And if you don't do that, then we have like the snowplow problems.
Yeah.
We have the homelessness that's kind of a different.
I mean, it turns out there's good government, and there's bad government, and good government costs money. And when you run out of money because the price of oil collapses, your government gets shittier. I mean, like I don't know why that's.
I mean, I'm just totally guessing here, but I think the fact that Juneau does such a good job plowing probably has something to do with the sales tax. They have a city sales tax. Mm. There's some more money.
Yeah.
Allocated. I mean, people say they have less road miles, which is true, but I mean, it's all relative. It scales. You know, you have so much money and you have so many machines and people and it's comparable.
You know,
you look at the cost per mile to plow something.
Yeah. I mean, I will say, I think Berkowitz did a good job cleaning a lot of things up, and he did a good job getting the city's financial house in order after they had to sort of wean themselves off of dependence on the state. I think he deserves credit for that. I think where Berkowitz really struggled was in building any kind of coalition to go do the things that he wanted to do. I mean, when he advanced those hotel purchases, like it was him out there. It was like he was the minority leader in the House all over again. And all he had to do was get up and give a speech, you know, because that's what you do when you're minority leader. You give a good speech. And I really think the question of whether we're going to get any of this stuff done is going to be, can someone actually get all the different stakeholders on the same page behind a plan? Because like Bronson has a plan for shelter that he keeps talking about. It's full of like legal holes and other problems, but it's like he has not rallied the community behind his plan. And like, can someone do that?
Well, he's got such an issue being he can override, but they have way more votes than they need to. He can veto, but the assembly has more votes than needed to override. So it's like, I mean, I almost feel like in general, and I don't care who's, if it's, you know, progressive or conservative, mayor, assembly, you know, I almost feel like when there is a split, like a real split, they have to kind of work together. And right now the assembly can just essentially like railroad him on stuff he wants to do. So if she's in there, if she wins, then it's going to be, you know, basically a kind of a lockstep assembly for the most part. And then we'll see what happens. But if it doesn't go well, then there could be a pendulum swing on the assembly next time, because half the seats are up. And
I'll be interested. I don't know if it'll be lockstep. I mean, I definitely see what you're saying. I think the assembly should work better with LaFrance than they have with Bronson.
Compared to Bronson, it's going to be much different.
But I think what's been interesting is because Bronson's kind of abdicated a lot of responsibility for things, the assembly has been able to take more responsibility for things. And it'll be interesting to see whether when there's a new mayor, if the assembly kind of recedes or if it tries to hang on to some of the power that it's well, developed, I mean, sure, during Bronson administration.
That's what Congress is. I mean, comparable over the decades, they've ceded so much power to the executive and for different reasons. It's kind of the opposite, but they don't want to make these decisions because they're politically hard.
Yeah.
So, and the executive also doesn't want to give the power back. So it's a reverse there, but it's comparable. I want to ask you about, we have 50 races up in November, 40 House, 10 Senate. I've been tracking it pretty close. The filing deadline is June 1st. Last time was redistricting. There was 59 seats up. A ton of people got paired, and there was, you know, ended up having 17 new members in the House out of 20, 19 if you count Sadler and Craig Johnson. But this time I'm looking right now, and it's only a few House members. Laddie Shaw's not running. He moved. Ben Carpenter's running for the Senate. Jenny Armstrong's not running. But everybody else so far, with the exception of a few who haven't filed, like Andy Story hasn't filed, they're all running. All 10 senators are running. So next year there'll be some turnover, but it's looking like way less turnover compared to last redistricting time.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, where do you see that going in terms of like impact on the election cycle and then the legislature?
I mean, I think the Senate, it's got a 17 member huge coalition, super majority. I think there's three key races. There's the Kawasaki Hajdukovic race, which is big. It's he wins a lot, like Pete Kelly and James Matherly, but those were in non-presidential years, and now his new district has some base, so that's going to be a key election. I think the David Wilson, you know, he joined with a coalition. He's in the Valley.
That's right.
He's got this Stephen Wright guy who's kind of perennial candidate, but he gets votes. And then he's got Rob Yount, who's Matsubara Assembly, very popular, very well liked. And then you have this Bjorkman Carpenter race. I mean, Bjorkman joined with the Democrats in the coalition, and he voted against to override Dunleavy's veto. So, you know, even if all three of those races go to the Republican or the more conservative, I still think the Senate's going to have a coalition.
Yeah. Okay.
Because you have like, you know, Geisel and Stedman, and the interesting with Click Bishop, he might not, I mean, he's talking about running for governor and he's filed. So if he were to not run, let's say he doesn't run and then Mike Cronk runs for that seat, that could be really kind of interesting.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think the Senate stays, even if it's smaller, there'll be some kind of coalition. They've worked so well this year. I mean, everything's so smooth. I don't know if you're paying close attention, but it's like any problems they do have, they keep behind closed doors. It's pretty boring compared to the old Senate where the majority didn't really have a majority. But the House, I think, is really going to be, I think it's 50-50 if the Republicans keep it, because this, you know, education stuff, you got Colomb has a race, Tom McKay has a race, Stanley Wright has a race, Craig Johnson, Amir and Chuck Kopp might run, you know, and then there's a couple of other, you know, wild cards. So right now their majority is 23, but it includes Bryce Edgman, Neil Foster, and CJ McCormick.
Yep.
So it's really, fragile and shaky.
Yeah. And I mean, I think I expect even with, I think you're right. I mean, obviously a lot more incumbency this time, far fewer open seats. I think you're going to see a lot of late filings because that's what we always see. And I think, I mean, that's the cool thing about this open primary system is you're going to see, it just puts so many more races on the table in terms of what can be competitive.
Mm-hmm. I was against the ranked choice when it mm-hmm. happened. I've always loved the open primary. Mm-hmm. That's the best because I'm independent. I've been independent since 2020. But, you know, I was thinking the ranked choice might confuse people. You look at these bubbles and ranking and nobody, it's not intuitive.
Yeah.
Turns out that's fine.
Yeah.
Nobody really struggled like I thought. Yeah. So it's going to be on the repealer. Now there is a lawsuit because it turns out, and they admit this, the repealer people have been leaving booklets out.
They've been pretty sloppy.
Yeah. And you can't do that.
Yeah.
Now, I also think it's pretty unlikely, unless it's really, really gross negligence, the judge is going to go against the people.
I agree. I think the negligence has been pretty wild. So it's like, if it was ever going to happen, it would be this time. But I think the courts have a long history of erring on the side of putting things on the ballot. So we'll see.
So that's going to drive turnout. There's going to be a lot of money spent on that. And I hope it stays. I mean,
It just makes more races competitive.
It's so surprising to me how mad some of the Republicans are.
Yeah.
Their first Republican governor reelected since Hammond.
Uh-huh.
The Republicans take back the House. And they took back the House. Years.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the Senate was already a fucking problem because of like you had the majority with included like Mia Costello and Roger Holland and you know Rob Myers and Mike Schauer and Shelley, and they didn't want to vote for the budget. Yeah. So it was already like that was a problem before ranked choice voting was a thing.
I mean you might have seen a coalition in the Senate even without it, you know.
That's what I'm saying. I don't think that I mean maybe a few races would have been potentially different with the primary, but I just love that anybody can get in the because I ran as independent in 2020 and I had to get out because Democrat was supposed to get out of the race and we had a deal and she reneged on it. But, you know, I had to get signatures. I missed the primary.
Yeah.
You lose kind of that chance for people to see your name when you're independent. It's really, the old system was not set up for independence.
Well, and I mean, I think the data is pretty clear that obviously you can't ever compare two systems because people may have behaved differently under a different system. But I think the data is pretty clear that if the election had happened exactly the same way that it did in 2022 under the old system, like Palin would have won the Republican primary and Peltola would have beaten Palin.
Yeah, I think so. And so it's just people get so, I guess they want to blame somebody or blame something for something they don't like. But I do think the Alaskans for Better Elections is going to have a very organized, funded campaign. Mm-hmm. The other side is full of some kind of strange people, this Izon guy and this, what's the other guy's name? The church guy.
Art Mathias.
Yeah. I mean, they've gotten run into trouble with AIPOC and the money and.
Yeah. I mean, they've literally committed tax fraud. They're not. Yeah. It's a tough start.
So I don't know if they're going to, I mean, it's going to run a statewide. I mean, what is it? At least $1 million, right?
Yeah.
At least $1 million to run a real effective statewide.
And we'll see if they, I think there probably is potentially national money that would come in, for the repeal. So we'll see if they can tap into that or if the national folks are scared off by some of the big problems. But I do think, I mean, the funny thing to your point about the open primary, like the question isn't whether Peltola would have beaten Sarah Palin in the general. I think that is sort of like established that she would have beaten mm-hmm. Palin. The question is whether Peltola would have made it out of a Democratic primary. And I think that's a much bigger question when you had Constant getting a lot of the Democratic support and then Al Gross running.
Yeah, and he dropped out afterwards. Mm-hmm. So he would have been, that's true. I mean
then the party would have had the opportunity to replace. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the party establishment were behind other candidates.
It's so incredible how, I think it was, Kim? She with
Kim Jones.
Kim Jones. She came to our, I've talked about this before. She came to our, it was Art Hackney, Kim Jones, and Austin Baird.
Oh, yeah.
This is right after Don Young died.
Uh-huh.
And we had this kind of roundtable mm-hmm. discussion about all these, it was like 50 or 49 candidates.
Yeah.
And she was all gung-ho on Peltola. And I'm thinking to myself, who in the fuck is this Mary Peltola? I didn't even know who she was because if she was in the legislature before, I was like really following this stuff. And I just remember thinking like that Kim was, I thought she was like crazy.
Yeah.
I was like, she's spun up on somebody who has like, in my mind, zero chance.
Uh-huh.
And man, like talk about just me being totally wrong.
Yeah.
And her of just, I don't know, maybe seeing something I missed or just being very hopeful and it worked out. I don't know how you explain it, but I mean, she was like, she called that.
No one deserves more credit for Mary winning. I mean, Mary's a once in a generation candidate. Like she deserves the bulk of the credit for her winning. But Kim, I don't think it happens without Kim either. And it was very cool that it was a very small group of people that believed in Mary early on.
I just was like thinking, I was like, this kid is delusional because she kept going back to this Mary. And I'm like, who?
Yeah.
You know? Well, this is like June of 2022. So it was very,
when we were talking about getting involved initially, it was like, there's 49 candidates. This is a total shit show. We were like, let's just sit this one out, get our popcorn, just enjoy it, you know? And Kim was like, I think this person could really do it. Like, I think she could change, you know, this could be like a historic generational candidate. And she convinced us
that'll be the race I think there's so many things she has to go on, but then there's so many reasons Republicans have to go, you know, whoever it's going to be with, if it's Dahlstrom, she seems to be getting the establishment kind of support, but you got Nick Begich. It's funny. It's like a repeat of two Republicans again. They didn't learn their lesson, but it's like she has the Willow and she has other things and she's voted certain tough votes, but then the Republicans just have, hey, she's with Biden.
Yeah.
So it's like, and Trump's on the ballot. So I think,
I don't think Alaskans like crave authenticity. And I think Mary's like, really taps into this, like, I'm a real Alaskan. I'm an Alaskan before I'm anything else. I'm authentic.
Oh, she's a super good. Yeah, I mean, she's genuine. She's authentic. And anybody who meets her knows that. You can't fake that kind of like authenticity.
And she's earned the support of the business community. And I think the business community sees now that having Murkowski in the position she's in with so much seniority, as like a fulcrum vote in the Senate, and then a congressional member with Biden's ear, it's a perfect setup for the business community here in Alaska to get the funding they want.
I'm convinced, and I've talked to a lot of people who were in these meetings and who were around it, that if she wasn't there, I'm not sure if Willow would have happened. Mm-hmm. I mean, it might have still happened, but I'm just convinced that she was such a force in with the Democrats saying, look, motherfuckers, if you don't do this, it's going to be really bad for me. It's going to be bad for all of us. This needs to happen.
I think you're 100% right. I think there is no chance that happens if Peltola is not there.
I mean, there was meetings where she was in there with Murkowski, and I think that there was just an access, and there was an ear that she had that other people wouldn't.
I think she represents the most red-leaning seat that is held by a Democrat.
I was reading this article, there's four or five seats that Democrats won where Trump won.
Uh-huh.
And she's one of them.
And I think she is the... Because Trump won Alaska by double digits.
He did. She has such the unique way, I guess, ability or kind of her character, like who she is as an Alaska Native woman who can say stuff. And it's just very hard for people to refute it.
Yeah.
It's like, what are you going to do? I mean, she's literally an Alaska Native person from, like, how do you, it's almost a checkmate for the people that want to come.
She's worked in the mining industry. She's been a legislator. She grew up in rural Alaska. She's been a fishing captain, like. Most of the key issues facing the state, she has actively worked in those industries.
She is a once in a kind of, you don't get people like that come around too often.
Yeah.
I know you got to go. You're going to the airport. Glad to have you on.
I'm glad you tracked me down.
We got to do it again, man. You're great. I feel like we could do another hour here with you.
I appreciate
talking about
it.
Stuff. So John Henry Eckendorn, Ship Creek Group, and in this last week, skier, kind of off work skier
and
folk fest.
That's right.
Attendee. So.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Jeff.
We'll see you around. I'm sure busy kind of summer coming up and fall for the election. So we'll see you around.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me.
All right, folks, if you have an idea for a podcast or want to do a podcast, get a hold of me and stay tuned for the next one. Landline.